ASHRAE Journal presents.
Welcome to ASHRAE Journal Podcast. I'm your host, Kelly Barraza, Managing Editor. On this episode, I'm interviewing Michael Berger, Head of Research and Development at Conservit, and author of the article, Leveraging Machine Learning to Optimize Chiller Plant Controls, published in the August 2024 ASHRAE Journal. Hey, Michael.
Hey, how are you, Kitty?
I am good. How are you doing?
Yeah, good. Thanks. Great to be here today. It's a little bit early here in Melbourne, but I think it'll be an interesting one, so I'm looking forward to it.
Yes, Michael is working with us. We're on the East Coast in the U.S., and he's in Melbourne, Australia. So this was a bit of a logistics question for this podcast on machine learning, AI, and optimizing chiller plants and HVAC applications. So we'll just start. What is your background in the industry with HVAC, Michael?
Well, it starts from quite a while ago now, I guess. In university, I was always interested in sustainability and, you know, renewable energy, energy efficiency. And, you know, from, you know, those days, I started to look into HVAC and renewable energy. And then I started my career in Singapore. I worked in a research center where we looked at smart grid, and then moved to green building consultancy, ESD consultancy. So that's where I really started to get into HVAC and learn more about how we can reduce energy consumption in buildings. And yeah, and since then, you know, for the past close to 14 years, I've been working in the HVAC industry. Again, trying to reduce energy consumption has been an interest, and looking at as well as how we can integrate renewable energy in buildings, make it all a more efficient system.
Okay, great. So what's your experience been like with ASHRAE?
Well, I guess it's an interesting one because obviously I have never lived in the US, but I think it does tell of the influence ASHRAE has that, you know, since the early days in university, I've, you know, been exposed to ASHRAE. I remember I did exchange in Denmark and I had some courses on HVAC, and they were already talking about ASHRAE standards. And then when I worked in Singapore, energy modeling for green buildings, we had to refer to the ASHRAE 90.1 standard a lot. I remember this one quite well. And then, you know, since then, obviously, even in Australia, it's still, we have our own version, I guess, of ASHRAE called ERA. But the ASHRAE standards and the guidelines are still very much followed and used as a basis. And, you know, more recently, I had a chance of presenting a conference paper at the Tampa conference last year on integrating renewable energy into HVAC system and optimizing them. And even more recently, I had the chance of having an article, you know, published in the ASHRAE journal. So it's been quite exciting. And it's been a long journey in parallel with ASHRAE, I guess, for me.
And we are very happy to have you as one of our members at ASHRAE.
Thanks.
So in that article that was published in August of this year, you state, one common question when considering applying AI algorithms to HVAC control systems is whether they will improve the operation beyond simply replicating the strategies of a well-designed conventional building automation system. Do you want to expand on that?
Yeah, for sure. I think, I guess at the most basic point, I think when we apply machine learning, we need to look at the challenges we're trying to tackle and not just try to look at it as a big black box and essentially apply domain knowledge to find good applications for machine learning, whether it's HVAC or other applications. And, you know, there are already a lot of good conventional sequence of operation to control HVAC systems that have been devised and designed, you know, over the past few decades, from whether it is trial and error or sometimes more advanced studies, you know, using modeling or using actual site trials and data. And I think one really good example of that is the ASHRAE Guideline 36, which lays out a lot of very good strategies for controlling HVAC systems in an efficient way, both in terms of, I guess, meeting the needs of the building and reducing the energy consumption. However, there are some scenarios where I think those conventional strategies may not always be the best. I think a lot of times there are some cases where it just works. You don't really need more predictive modeling because it's cases where it generalizes quite well over different types of buildings. So there's quite a few examples. I mean, maybe a simple one would be, you know, trying to do optimal start-stop. You know, it's obviously more efficient to not run your plant if you don't need it. I don't think you need special predictions for that. I think another example is for cooling tower operation. Often we find, and it's quite, I think, well established in the industry, is that overall it's better to run more cooling towers, you know, using the fan affinity law, you're going to reduce your energy consumption. And I think most times for this type of application, it just works, and there's no point to have a machine learning algorithm trying to find that for you because we know it works well. I think where it makes a difference is where there's no one-size-fits-all sequence of operation, where from one building to another, there are some things that make it that you need to know the characteristic of your site to know what the best sequence of operation is, whether it's because of the equipment performance, whether it's because of weather or load requirement. In particular, I would say cases where there's a trade-off between equipment is often the ones we look at. For instance, if we look at the cooling towers again, one case where I think predictive modeling is useful is when we, I think, of the living cooling tower temperature set point, because if we reduce it, we're going to use more cooling tower power, but we're going to use less chiller power. So where is the holistic most efficient point? It's not always clear. And when from one building to another, it might change. From one day to another in the same building, depending on the load, depending on the weather, it might change. And so these are the applications where I think predictive modeling or machine learning can really make a difference. But on the other hand, there are a lot of specific situations or specific sequence of operation where it's not necessarily required. And I think when it's not required, it's probably not a good idea to try to apply it because, you know, it's not so simple. It requires a lot of research. There is a level of risk in terms of developing something that's reliable. And also sometimes there is also a question about transparency to the end users. So I think, you know, there's no point to over-engineer. And that's maybe sometimes what can happen, and focus only on applications where it's really required.
What do you see as your biggest concern when it comes to using AI and machine learning in HVAC?
Following on what I was talking about, I think, well, first I would say, I don't think we're quite at the level, and maybe some people think differently, but where we have to worry about, you know, our buildings becoming sentient and rising against us. But
Terminator 2, Skynet.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, I know when we say the term artificial intelligence, sometimes people think of those things. I think at this point in time, the technology we have for AI is still a tool more than something that can have its own, you know, choice. But I do think there are some concerns. And yeah, as I said, following on what I was talking about just earlier, I think it's more about the way it's applied. And, you know, if there's application without domain knowledge of, say, HVAC or whatever the application is, sometimes the application of machine learning can be not ideal and maybe not suited, and that can create a bad experience for end users and scare them away for the next time. So I think the risk is more to scare users away, because I think there are a lot of benefits from using machine learning in buildings or any other HVAC application. And I think one key point which can be done is to make sure it's as transparent as possible for the end user. But sometimes there might be a tendency to have it, as I said earlier, as a black box that may not make sense and maybe hard to troubleshoot. So, yeah, I do think, you know, as I said, machine learning is a tool. It can enhance automation. And, you know, we have been having automation for the past 200 years, helping, you know, technology evolve. So I think it's just another step in that. But we just have to make sure the solution is tailored carefully for the application.
Yeah, exactly. It's not a one-size-fits-all solution. And I definitely, when we've done our research in AI, machine learning, when it comes to building systems, or just generally, transparency is like the top concern among end users. So appreciate you going into that. Can you talk more about what supervised learning is and how it can be used for improving equipment efficiency?
So supervised learning, it's just one subtype of machine learning. And really, I should start by saying, you know, machine learning is technically considered an application. And so it has a lot of applications in engineering or such. It relies on mathematics. And, you know, a lot of what machine learning does is derived from similar things that you may see in engineering, right? So when you talk about supervised learning, it's really about learning a model, essentially, when you have a set of inputs and you have a specific output for those that is known in your data set. So I think it's known, but, you know, linear regression, which is known by most people in the industry, I'm sure everyone I should assume, is the simplest form of supervised learning. Obviously, people have heard of neural network or a lot of different techniques, but at the end of the day, it is just, quote-unquote, say, just a model to learn like we see in engineering as well. I think probably the difference in machine learning is that it's rooted in the idea of to a degree of real time and to use computers in real time to find insights. But its most basic level, it is an application of, you know, mathematical principle that a lot of engineers know. It's just that the techniques, thanks to, I guess, the advances in computing hardware becoming more and more complex and are able to deal with more and more data efficiently. And so in terms of how it's applied to improving equipment efficiency, I would say it depends on the application. It can be just one aspect of a solution. So if we look at optimizing real-time controls, the supervised learning is the first step to learn the performance or the behavior of the equipment, for instance, or to predict the cooling load in the building or things like that. And then it needs to be brought together in an optimization framework, which is the next step. But it can also be the supervised learning, the machine learning can also be the main part of your solution. For instance, if we think of something like predictive maintenance to see if the performance of an equipment is deteriorating over time, we can learn the original performance of the equipment, the ideal performance, and then compare to what's happening now and see if it's decreasing over time. So in that case, it can help us do predictive maintenance, improve the efficiency of the equipment back to its original state if we can detect it early enough.
In your journal article, Leveraging Machine Learning to Optimize Chiller Plant Controls, machine learning is applied to capture chiller predicted power compared to actual power. How is that done?
That's done with data at the end of the day. I think the idea of machine learning often is to look at site data in real time on a controller on site, control hardware on site. But it can also be used with manufacturer data as a starting point, and you can use with both, right? The way we look at it is usually to develop a somewhat generic model that's broad enough to be applicable to many sites or many similar equipment that are out there, and then the model is used as a basis to be calibrated automatically on individual sites. So we're looking at water-cooled chiller model that might be a specific form, a specific equation to a degree. And then we make sure to calibrate the parameter of the equation for each machine so that we can learn on site the specificity of each machine.
That sounds very complex. And my follow-up to that is, can machine learning be used to capture even more complex relationships than that?
Yeah, for sure. There is no real limit. I think, again, the limit is data. The more data you have, whether it's a lot of different, I guess, the breadth of the data or how much different data points you have for the same equipment, for instance, that's what defines how complex, you know, the model you can learn. So there is a few different approaches, and it's just about designing the one that suits the application. One of them is to, for instance, in HVAC, we can look at developing models for individual equipment within a chiller plant, like I'm presenting in the article in the Ashwood Journal. And then the next step, I guess, for the more complex relationship is making sure that the model of our individual equipment account for variables that interact with each equipment. So for instance, I think I mentioned earlier, cooling towers, the living cooling tower temperature impacts the cooling tower power usage. It also impacts the chiller power usage. So we need to make sure all those models take into account all those types of variables. And then, again, as I mentioned earlier, we can put them all together in an optimization framework to find those more complex relationships. Another approach can also be to look at a whole system, a whole chiller plant, a whole HVAC system as one model, a more, I guess, black box model. So this approach is totally valid. There are some pros and cons, you know. So this type of approach requires a lot of data because it doesn't learn individual interaction per equipment, but it has to see them all to a degree. So for a building application, it may not be the most suited one because you would need to be able to have seen operation of your plant in millions of different scenarios that may not all occur. Whereas if you model individual equipment, you just need to find the model for each one of them. And sometimes you can then predict what would be the behavior in a slightly different scenario of the whole plant, as long as you've seen that equipment in that scenario. But yeah, there's a lot of different ways to approach it. And it can also be done to predict things that are a little bit less tangible, like, you know, trying to predict the load in the building as, you know, one data point, essentially, without necessarily knowing, you know, historically we would use to predict the cooling load, we would use a lot of physical information about the building, right? Like, what's the building fabric, you know, what's the material, what's the thickness of every wall, what are all the different rooms in the building, and this can be very complex. And there's always assumptions in those more, you know, physical models. And at the end of the day, all these assumptions add up, and often, I think, at least from my experience, we find that those are not very accurate to the actual operation of the building, whereas a more data-driven machine learning model can learn the cooling load of the building with having less knowledge of the physical makeup of the building, but more looking at things like weather, learning patterns from the load and things like that. Those are just a few examples.
Yeah, it seems like there's just a lot of different things that machine learning and this kind of work can be used to, like, learn how these buildings work, make them better, even if we don't have data, masing data. I'm sure you can get lost in the weeds when people are playing around with this kind of stuff and what they can do with that data and information. How can the proposed optimal control strategy be used to tackle challenges in chiller plant operation?
Yeah, that's a very good question. I think, as I mentioned earlier, we think we should look at some specific challenges that need predictive modeling to tackle. I think there's a couple of types of these challenges, I guess a couple of categories. One of them is trade-offs between, say, various pieces of equipment, you know, between the chillers and the cooling towers, between the chillers and the condenser pumps. If we look in the broader building, you know, is it more efficient to make a chiller work harder or AHU fans work harder? Those are trade-offs because if, you know, you could make one work harder, the one work less hard, and save energy possibly, but it could be that in the end it ends up being overall, it might actually be using more energy. So it can be hard to know. So that's where we look at predictive modeling. The other type of scenario is when we look at especially equipment part load performance. I think this is well known in the industry. We have things like HRI that look at not just the design efficiency of equipment, but over a range of part load points. But it can be tricky even from there to have a good picture of all the different scenarios the equipment can run in. One example of application there is, for instance, the number of equipment you may want to run. In a chiller plant, you could have any number of chillers. You know, you could have 2, 3, 4, 5. You know, I've seen plants with 20 chillers. And, you know, sometimes it can be hard to know for this specific weather, for the load in the building, for the chill water temperature set point you have right now, is it better to run 4 chillers or 5 chillers or 6 chillers? There's no one answer. It depends of the equipment. It depends of the situation. So that's where I think being able to predict the power usage, the efficiency of the equipment, allows us to make that decision on the fly.
So in the article, optimal set points and combinations of equipment can be resolved together as a part of a mathematical optimization framework. What is the simplest solution to predict the overall chiller plant power use?
I guess I'd address it more in terms of the optimization, the mathematical side of things. For any optimization problem, there is one simple, quote-unquote simple approach, which is simple to implement but may not be very computationally efficient, which is what is called exhaustive search. Sometimes it's referred to as a brute force approach, which is essentially to look at all the possible situations. Once you already have the models of your plant or your system, and predict for each case what is going to be the power usage. So if we look at, for instance, finding the optimal condenser water flow that is going to balance your chiller power, your condenser pump power, maybe your cooling tower power. It's basically trying every values of condenser flow that could happen, every percentage of condenser flow, and finding what the power usage is, and then looking at the lowest one.
How can the interior point method be used for mathematical optimization solvers? And how does that relate to machine learning?
So that's kind of the next step from the previous question. So, you know, exhaustive search that I talked about just now is relatively simple to implement. It's simple to understand, I think. But it's not very tractable, it's not very practical, because it's as soon as you have a few variables you're dealing with, you know, the number of scenarios you're going to check goes very quickly into the hundreds of thousands, millions, can go easily billions or more, because as soon as you have a few variables, you have to iterate over each variable and then over each variable over that. And so it's just not very practical. That's where the whole field of mathematical optimization comes in, which is about finding the solution in a faster way. So interior point method is just one technique that's for one family of problems. in mathematical optimization, there's a lot of different, I guess, types of problems. They can be constrained, which I think is often the case in our field, or they can be unconstrained. And so a constrained optimization problem is when the decision variables, the values you're trying to find, so the optimal set point, for instance, has a range of allowable values. So some of it is obvious. We can't have negative temperature, or I guess we can have negative temperature, but we can't have negative flow, for instance. So if we look at the condenser flow, obviously we have to tell our algorithm, well, don't look at those. And obviously, as you or your chiller, you know, has a minimum load or a maximum load, it can't go beyond. So as soon as we look at this, we look at constrained optimization, which is a family of optimization problem, which again, if you think about it as an exhaustive search problem, it's not complicated to think about. You can just try all the values that are allowable. But when you start to look at a more efficient method, you have to make sure you built in those boundaries in your problem, and it's not necessarily that straightforward. And that's where a method like interior point method come in. It's a method to find efficiently, you know, the solution of a constrained optimization problem. But at the end of the day, you know, optimization, you know, whether it's constrained or unconstrained, whether it's convex or non-convex, it is really a key for machine learning in a couple of ways. First, when we look at learning a model, at the end of the day, the process to do so is an optimization problem. But also when we talked about finding the optimal set points and number of equipment in the plant and all of that, that's another optimization problem. So actually, we found in our applications, we use very similar algorithms for both of those things, which are the two steps of the solution often, but they actually are using the same, I guess, technology.
How does using machine learning applications for HVAC control compare to applications of machine learning to other technologies?
Yeah, that's a great question. That's something I was thinking about when, you know, we talked about this podcast. I think it is actually quite a different type of application for a couple of reasons. I think when we compare it to some of the more commonly known machine learning application of every day that we think about, right? Like GPT-4, you know, ChatGPT, or things like image recognition, or recommender systems for Netflix that finds, you know, what they think is the most suitable TV show for each user. Those are actually quite different because they are usually require much more data. You know, when you look at image recognition, then every pixel in the image is going to be an input. So your model has, you know, thousands, can have millions of inputs. You know, it's the same for GPT-4, you know, large language models. You know, every word has to be able to be predicted. It's, you know, millions of inputs. And the way machine learning approaches these types of problems is by having even more data, I guess. And, you know, for GPT-4, they used, I'm pretty sure if I'm not wrong, they use a copy of the whole internet of like 2019 or something like that, where they use the whole internet as a way to learn the model. And I think it takes them months to run the learning process. So that's kind of the solution, I guess. What machine learning brings is if you have enough data, if you can learn those complex problems. In HVAC, it's a little bit different because I think we're in a situation where we do have a lot of buildings, but I don't think we have enough buildings and enough data from buildings in so many different scenarios that we can quote-unquote brute force the problem like they can with image recognition, where you have, you know, billions of images you could learn your model from. So it is very hard, I think, to learn kind of a global model of buildings that can find automatically, like a black box, the optimal sequence of operation. So instead, I think our application has been looking more at doing something that they don't often do in those more common applications, which is to learn automatically, autonomously on site your model. So if you think of ChatGPT, the model was learned upstream. So it was learned in the past, it's set in stone, and the process of learning is actually, you know, I think we think machine learning is all computers, but there's actually a lot of human inputs in it because they're going to be tuning and tweaking their model until they find the most suitable one. There's a lot, they're going to check the results, make sure it's as accurate as possible. Then when it's done, they're going to take that model and use it to predict only, not to learn when it's in production. In our case, I think we have to learn from individual buildings. And if we want to remove the human aspect in it, and if we want to, I guess, reduce it so that the end user can focus on other things, we have to have some level of autonomous learning on site. And I think that's where maybe it's fair to say it's not as complex as some of the other applications like ChatGPT, But it has its own client list, its own specific set of client lists to tackle, where we have to make sure that to remove the human in the loop, there's a lot of automated processes that happen in the learning so that we find, you know, automatically clean the data, automatically validate the model and things like that to make sure that the autonomous learning happens properly. And I think actually, from my perspective, it is probably the most important part in our application, because I think the fun part, I guess, is to find a model and validate it, and it's all well and good. And then you can think, okay, the work is done now. But in practice, that's, I think, what makes or break a machine learning solution in our industry is everything that goes around it, you know, making sure that it's applicable in practice, making sure that, as I said, you know, data is never clean. There's always going to be data issues, communication issues, sensor issues. So, you know, being able to automatically detect that and know whether this today the data is good enough to be used for the learning or not, or rather, okay, we just not use it, or, you know, whether your equipment is running in stable conditions or not, and then making sure that the model you learn is actually validated. There's a lot that goes around the core algorithm, and I think that's actually, from my experience, what really makes a difference.
Yeah, it just sounds like there's like a lot of relationships and a lot of hands that go into making sure that, you know, machine learning is effective, like in theory and on the blackboard, but in actual practice, there's a lot more that goes on to make sure all the parts work together.
Yeah, that's right. That's exactly right.
So was the machine learning driven approach described in your article applied to real life settings?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, in practice, this was applied to dozens of sites around the world now, you know, in Australia, in the US, in Europe, in Southeast Asia, we've had some applications. So definitely. And I think it's probably a good time, I think, to talk a bit about the process that goes into developing this type of solution. And so, you know, it starts as a research project. You know, the first step is kind of classic, you know, it's literature review, seeing what's there already exists out there, and then, you know, propose the approach. And then we look at validating with site data, to answer your question about real life setting, you know, to validate models or trial models. And then the next step that we take, at least, is to do an initial prototype. So this is offline. When I say offline, it means, you know, it's not running in a building, but on the computer. And the point of this is to validate the premise of the idea, you know, making sure, are we actually getting any savings from this? You know, is it, if we find that in theory and paper in the end, we only get, you know, 0.01% savings, and maybe it's not a worthwhile endeavor. So this is, I think, a very important part to make sure that the premise makes sense and just test the idea. And actually, we use a lot of Python for this. So, I mean, I'm an engineer, so I was taught with tools like MATLAB and things like that. But I found that Python is a very good and actually quite user-friendly programming language. And this is because they have a lot of libraries, so they have a lot of basically tools that have been contributed by, you know, people in the industry that are available for free, that are open source, that can replicate a lot of what you can find in more commercial tools. And so we do a lot of work in Python to do this prototyping, to do this validation. And then the next step is to do some testing on target hardware to see if the solution is viable in terms of the time it takes to learn and to find the solution, because we're looking at real-life, real-time controls. So, you know, it can't take a day to find, you know, what the optimal set point should be now, because it will be too late. So we have to make sure that the optimization is efficient. And then the next step is site trial, and that's when we deploy, you know, prototype on, or I guess at this point, they are already quite mature solutions on site to verify what happens. And importantly, we try to do measurement and verification studies. And for the approach in the article, we actually had the chance of having third-party studies that were commissioned by New South Wales government in Australia from a customer who, you know, there was a scheme that allowed them to get a third-party study to verify that, you know, the solution actually delivered. And so I agree. I think this is really key to validate and to, you know, increase confidence in the solution. And then after this, for us, it's really about productizing the solution. We look at it as, we want to make sure, I think a key part is that we want to make sure we have a solution that's flexible enough for a lot of different plants. We know each plant is a little bit different, sometimes a lot different. And if you have a solution, I think I've seen a lot in the literature that works for a site and that looks great, it might still be a lot of work to apply it to another site. So we look at making sure we can handle things like fault on clears and make sure that we automatically find, take that into account and find what are the best next clear to look at. We want to make sure we can handle all sorts of scenarios, and that's a big part of the work. And yeah, I think to the point of transparency we talked about earlier, again, for us, there's a few things, but looking at making sure the user interface tells the end user exactly what's happening in their building, and in particular, why is the machine learning making this decision, right? Like showing what are all the different scenarios that the machine learning looked at and why, and show that, okay, this one was the most efficient. Because otherwise, as soon as something goes wrong in the building, even if it's not necessarily the fault of the machine learning, the first thing would be like, well, let's just turn it off because we don't really know what it's doing. So I think giving that transparency, giving that feedback to the user is key. Another aspect along the same lines is to allow the end user to override specific part of the optimization so that, you know, if they need to set the condenser water flow to design for whatever reason, we want to allow them to do it without turning off all the other optimization. I think that's something that when we worked with end users was really helpful to give them confidence that they can troubleshoot issues while having this type of system on site.
So what can be done to make sure facility managers and teams can be set up for success when running buildings that use machine learning?
So as I said, we look at user interface, we look at give them a lot of feedback, and again, you know, allowing them to override part of the logic, I think, is really key. But beyond that, I think like a lot of new technology, it's just about training, it's about getting them involved as well, because I think the, you know, the facility managers, people on site, they know their building better than anyone. There's always something we learn from them. And I find getting their buy-in is key. So, you know, they have to be involved from day one in understanding what we're proposing and in seeing the value in it.
Kind of like helping the end users know their building better, hopefully.
Yeah, in a way.
What other applications do you hope to use machine learning for when it comes to HVAC control?
I have a few things. First of all, there are some we have already worked on that are similar technology, but for slightly different outcomes. I mentioned it earlier, but predictive maintenance, I think, is key. You know, if we have models, if we can predict the behavior of the building, we want to detect automatically when it gets worse. And it's not always that obvious straight away, because when you look at a chiller, you know, to just talk basics, we know that, you know, the efficiency of a chiller is going to change based on the load, based on the temperatures, the flows, and things like that. So if you look at your chiller and the COP is telling you 6, or I don't know, the kilowatt per ton is 0.5, I don't think those translate, but I think at least they talk to different people. You don't know, is it good? Is it bad? It's not sure, right? Like the design might be 0.4, but that's at full load. The IPLV value is also just one value. So it can be hard to know, is it running efficiently right now based on the conditions? So using the model to predict what it should be doing versus what it's doing now in those conditions, I think, is really helpful. We've also been looking at, you know, there's more and more, for instance, free cooling, air cooled chillers with free cooling. I think we've seen, you know, more and more applications like that. We've been working on integrating those types of machines, making sure the models apply, or if not, being adapted to that. And I think for me, the next step is to really look at the full HVAC system beyond the central plant, you know, looking at all the airside equipment. I think for us, it made sense to look at the plant initially because it's centralized. It's less equipment to look at. I guess it's more bang for your buck, really, because you can focus just on the plant and it uses a lot of energy. So the savings you have there are quite significant straight away. But I think there is benefit to making sure that the whole HVAC system, including the airside, which is much more distributed, is running efficiently altogether holistically. So that's kind of my realistic answer. I think beyond that, there are a lot of interesting applications that I've seen or heard of or thought about. Some of them, I've seen some discussions at conferences, including ASHRAE conferences or others. And you know, just to name a few, what I would call semantic modeling, which is to be able to, when you get a data from site, being able to detect what type of data it is without having necessarily the need of someone telling you, okay, this is my chiller plant temperature, this is my chiller, this is my AHU. Being able to automatically detect equipment, data points, and components based on the data that's just available from the network. is something that could, you know, reduce a lot of the integration work that sometimes is a prohibitive cost of installing a new system, right? I've seen some talks as well, which I found quite interesting, and for anomaly and fault detection to try to learn the human response to various issues so that then after a while the system can make the decisions themselves. So yeah, I think there's a lot of possible applications. It's quite exciting for sure.
It's a new frontier, I think, and in a lot of ways, but definitely for building systems. I know there's a lot of buzz around machine learning and applying that to HVAC and control and plants and stuff like that to make it just the energy savings are, you know, in terms of actual energy, but also money and things like that is, you know, profound. So, and you did talk about cost prohibitive stuff like that. So on that note, talk about money. Can machine learning save stakeholders money when applied effectively?
Yeah, for sure. And I think there's several different ways, right? We talked about optimal controls. So this can save money by reducing the system energy consumption, right? So that's maybe the most obvious one. But, you know, predictive maintenance, anomaly detection, that can allow to reduce costly repairs if they can be detected early enough and just be managed by maintenance rather than having to replace an equipment. And then there is always the idea of automating tasks, right? I talked about integration of data. There's a lot of deployment tasks when we have to deploy, for instance, a control system. There's a lot of tuning. There's a lot of human actions that are required. And we know the facility management team might be spending a lot of time trying to troubleshoot issues, looking at the data and things like that. So I think we can save them a lot of time doing those more mundane tasks by being more automated and then allowing them to focus on more value-driven tasks or tasks that really add value to their stakeholders. So yeah, I think there's definitely quite a few avenues for that.
What would you recommend engineers do if they want to learn more about applying machine learning and artificial intelligence in HVAC?
Yeah, I mentioned it earlier, actually, but I think Python is definitely a great programming language with already a lot of libraries, already a lot of, you know, solutions to a degree, or at least parts of the solutions that are already present there that I would encourage people to try to learn. You know, if you look at machine learning, it's also the language that's promoted a lot anyway. I think I would also recommend to look at, you know, at the literature. There's already a lot of interesting papers, you know, on various solutions. And I think we are getting to the point where, you know, there are some solutions that can already be used. So, you know, there's to a few different degrees, right? There are some fully formed solutions that I think can be applied to buildings. There's also some algorithms that, you know, maybe apply to your process, right? If you're designing a system, if you're designing a sequence of operation for your building, there may already be some algorithms that can be used as a one-off just to run on your building or on your setup so that you can try to find insights. So I think we are starting to be at the point where the technology is becoming more mature, and I would encourage to look at out there in the market what are the solutions already available. But as I said, you know, I definitely encourage anyone to start to look into, you know, how can I apply it almost from scratch? You know, there's already a lot of good machine learning libraries, a lot of good optimization libraries in Python, for instance. There's also another language called Julia that's getting popular. And, you know, for the engineers, I think it can be a little bit daunting initially. Maybe I just speak for myself, but, you know, when we talk about programming languages, it can feel like a big step. And we might be more used to tools like MATLAB or others. But I think we are at the point where with all the libraries, with all the tools that go around it, where you can create a similar experience that, you know, would make engineer at home with those types of tools. And, you know, a lot of them are free and a lot of them have a lot of support from the industry because Python is used, you know, in AI, in machine learning. So there's a lot of people contributing to it and adding a lot of, you know, building blocks that can be reused.
We definitely recommend, you know, engineers who maybe aren't familiar with programming languages to try learning a new language, essentially, so they can just become more familiarized with that. Are there any projects or developments in machine learning for building systems that you're excited about?
For sure. I think we're looking at more and more renewable energy in buildings. And I think that's definitely an interesting avenue. We worked on a project and actually presented on this ASHRAE conference in Tampa last year to integrate, you know, solar thermal with absorption chillers and a mix of normal electrical chillers and storage. And I think those are quite interesting. They're not extremely common just yet, but I think looking in the future, we're going to see more and more of those types of buildings. And because they're new, you know, there's no ASHRAE guideline 36 for those, right? There's no good sequence of operation that have been used in hundreds and thousands of buildings that can be reused. So I think it's a great application for machine learning to, from the start, you know, helping at the most basic level, how we should control those types of building. And then again, as I mentioned earlier, a couple of more exploratory, I guess, direction is, I think everyone would be curious to see how large language models like GPT-4 could be applied in our field. I think there's some ideas for sure. There's some applications, you know, in terms of chatbots that can help, you know, maybe do things and things like that. But I'm sure there are more opportunities. I've also seen things around thermal comfort and imaging. You know, there's a lot of good ideas out there. Not all of them might be practical, but I think it's exciting to see what can people come up with and, you know, see if they can make a business case out of it.
Thermal comfort, especially. I think that's something that even if you're a non-engineer like myself, like that's like, oh, that's interesting. I would love to see how you can use super math to help solve thermal comfort problems, you know, in a building when you're one person's freezing, the other person's super hot, you know.
That's always the problem, right? I think you can convince anyone of like, oh, I've got this great algorithm that can save you energy, and then still look at you and be like, why am I still so cold in my building and my neighbor is so hot?
Yeah, exactly. I'm still cold, though, right? Yeah. What do you see as the biggest challenge in getting machine learning and artificial intelligence to be applied more widely in HVAC?
I think the challenge is overcoming the biggest challenge right now. I think we're in progress of doing that. And I think it's probably been, at least from my experience, and maybe some have different experiences, but I think in the past, you know, maybe 10 years ago, there may have been some negative experiences from end users with AI, with ML, which was applied maybe a bit in a too general purpose way, maybe with a lack of domain knowledge, maybe by practitioners of machine learning with not many engineers that were involved in the design of the solution. And maybe people were burnt a bit and, you know, thought, okay, that's not for me. So I think the challenge is to convince those, you know, end users that this can be applied in a reliable way, end user-centric way, focusing first and foremost on reliability and then optimization. But I'm quite optimistic. You know, I think that challenge is being overcome right now in a second wave of applications that are more targeted, which have been designed with more input from the experts and that are more transparent, really.
Great. Well, thank you, Michael, for joining us on ASHRAE Journal podcast.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. It was great talking to you, Kelly.
Thank you so much. We just have to wrap it up there. We can go all day about machine learning, I think, and just this topic. It's just a vast one. Maybe we'll have you on again to talk about it down the road when you write another article for us. So I want to thank the listeners for listening in. This has been Kelly Barraza and Michael Berger with ASHRAE Journal Podcast.
The ASHRAE Journal Podcast team is editor Drew Champlin, managing editor Kelly Barraza, producer and assistant editor Allison Hambrick, assistant editor Mary Sims, associate editor Tani Pilevsky, and technical editor Rebecca Matisofsky. Copyright ASHRAE. The views expressed in this podcast are those of individuals only and not of ASHRAE, its sponsors, or advertisers. Please refer to ASHRAE.org/podcast for the full disclaimer.